How's it going? And welcome to episode 38 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. I am once again joined by Kevin Hastings, who should be followed himself on the Twitter at HastingKevin. We are recording this episode Monday, November 8th, a full week after the final Major League Baseball game has concluded. By the time anyone is listening to this, it will have been a full 2 weeks without a Major League game. So, Kevin, how are you holding up? What are you doing to fill that baseball void?
For the first week, we had the World Series, Adam. That was awesome. Had a great time watching that. Actually got to attend a game one with Atlanta fan and two Houston fans. One Houston fan and the Atlanta fan, a brother and sister. So it was a really good time. And since then, we're drafted already.
I was going to say, how many drafts have you finished already?
I have finished, including the mock that we did together, I have finished four drafts, and I am in my second draft champions draft as we speak.
Nice. Oh, yeah, that's the speed draft champions draft yes, that you're in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we started about, let's see, we started 27 hours ago, and we are in round 32.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. So right after that, you started that one, I tried to... Surprisingly, I actually tried to jump in that one in your draft, not realizing that it was filled out on the side, out in the message boards, and they kicked me out. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll jump in an NFBC 50. So I'm in the middle of 50s, but we're only in round 8. And so I think the draft started.
That's a pretty good piece. When I talked to you last night, you were in the second.
So. The first round was tough. It was tough. It was like everybody complains about the slow drafts of like TGFBI and what have you. You really shouldn't complain about being in a slow draft if you're drafting in November, I feel. This is the first time I've drafted this early, a non-mock draft. But it was hard not to be like, come on, let's go. But yeah, we made it. We're in round 8. I'm on the clock, but it's a 4-hour clock. So I'm going to wait until after we record to place my pick here. But maybe I'll get some information from you guys to make my picks. I have not picked a starter yet, which would, again, in round 7 or 8, first starter, it might go over pretty well with our guest today. Without further ado, we have a very special guest with us today, Mr. Nick Pollock himself. Nick, of course, can be the founder of PitcherList.com, our boss, and everybody says nice things about him when he's here on the podcast. So let's just make sure we do that as well as we move along. And Nick, I've heard you joke throughout the end of the season and into the offseason so far on the multiple platforms that you've been on that you literally only talk about one thing, and that is starting pitching. So I'm looking forward to talking just about that one topic throughout this podcast. Nice little fist bump there. Nick, thanks for joining us finally. Episode 38. It only took us 38 episodes to get you on here, and welcome.
Oh, what is happening? Yeah, it's been too long. And I feel so selfish jumping around like these Pitcher's Podcast Network episodes. Cause like, all right, I think you guys have enough of me. I don't know. But I hope you say good things also when I'm not on a podcast. Just a thought. I don't know.
Just making sure you're listening. We want to make sure you're listening.
No, but yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I get to talk about pitching today. This is great. I have the greatest joy, I think, when I go on other people's podcasts, because literally I don't have to sit through other things. They're there to talk about the one thing I want to talk about. And that's awesome. So yeah, we're going to talk pitching today. Kevin, Adam, it's good to see you both. Had you both on the corner. I don't know if that your episodes are each out yet, but we already did them. They were great. So it's just nice to be here. It took me too long.
Yeah. Good to have you. And like you said, we're going to talk about some pitching specifically revolving around the free agents that are now currently out in the wild. Everybody knows who they are. Options have been declined. Qualifying offers are still out there as we record on the November 8th. So we do not know if any of them have been declined or picked up as of yet. So we'll find that out soon. CBA negotiations looming. Who's to say that any of these guys are actually going to get signed before December 1st, which of course the current CBA expires at that time.
Don't remind me. Really do not. Sleeping is hard this month. Okay. I'm terrified about it. Obviously, pitchless will be fine. But man, can we just not have a lockout? Please. That'd be great.
I saw a tweet earlier of somebody that was like, it seems good that we're not hearing anything about it. Especially like before the 2021 season, or even like during the 2020 season as it was getting to the actual start date. We heard a lot. Like we heard a lot of back and forth, a lot of negativity, and that didn't turn out very well. So I'm of the belief that the less we hear, the better.
I hope that's the case. I truly do, because I think baseball as a whole really needs a true proper season being removed from 2020. You can say that was 2021, but even we need to be eased into it. We were worried about teams having full stadiums on opening day, if you remember that. And I just want that one, like, normal season again. Please give that to us, MLB. We want it so badly.
All right. Like we said, December 1st, the CBA does expire. Before then, a couple of important dates that people should be keeping an eye on. That mentioned that qualified offers are all out there. Free agency has officially opened as of today. And November 17th is the deadline for players to reject or accept those qualifying offers. So we'll know for sure at the latest by then if we have any extra free agents out there or less free agents out there as well. And then arbitration doesn't start until, you know, December. So we'll cross that when we have to. Unfortunately, that deadline for arbitration eligible player contracts doesn't come until after the CBA expires. So that could be a whole mess. All right. What I want to talk to you guys about today is what aspects of the free agent market that we are most interested in analyzing the starting pitching market. And what I mean by that is, where do we want these players to go for our fantasy teams? And as Kevin and I are talking about drafting right now, like, we have to take speculation notes as we're making these drafts. If we're waiting until the March draft season, you're going to know where all these players are. For the most part, there might be one or two stragglers that wait until, you know, spring training starts or what have you. They're holding out. But for the most part, we're going to know where everybody's going to be at. What I want to know from you guys is where you're hoping these guys are going to be. And then it's Kevin, as you're drafting all these drafts, like, what kind of speculations are you making as you are moving guys up or down your draft board? And what other aspects you're taking into consideration? So, Nick, you put out a little thing called The List every week throughout the season. You've got your current off-season list live at pitcherlist.com right now, which will obviously be updated. I'm sure you update it in your head every hour.
Be updated right now, yes. Absolutely.
But in print, you update it, you know, periodically when it feels right. But what I want to know is, you talk a lot about pitcher talent, which obviously is the biggest aspect of it. But there are a lot of other small nuances, anything from who their pitching coach is, their longevity, how long they've been in the game, the mental game, the Alex think fast part of the game. I'm curious to know what other aspects play a bigger role as you are using tiebreakers when you are moving players up and down the list, or if you're changing tiers, if there's a certain aspect that will affect whether or not they're going up or down in a tier, or the difference between, you know, 40 and 39, and people are looking at your list, whether you like it or not, like that number, like that nice round number, that 40 or that 39 makes a big difference.
It's so silly, guys. The number doesn't matter. It's relative. Understand the crop of pitchers, the full landscape, the number. Oh no, they went up five spots or they lost three. Yeah, because these three guys returned from the IL and he's clearly better or worse than those three guys. Okay, now, quick question. Do I have permission to rant a little more?
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, and I can edit this later. It's fine.
Okay, I get this question a lot. I actually got it on Twitter today about what variables I look at when it comes to assessing a pitcher. And Adam, you hit it on the nail on the head there. Yeah, talent to me is one of the biggest things, but what are they capable of? And truly understanding the arsenal itself and understanding that slider, and can the slider be better? Do I expect it to maybe be worse, and so on, and breaking down each pitch, then all in tandem, how that pitcher, I expect them to perform next year. That to me is such a heavy weight on everything. Now, I get like home road splits or whatever. Actually, in First Pitch Arizona, was at the streaming thing with Derek Carty. And I made him on the thing. I was like, Derek, how do you feel about home run splits? And he said, home run splits are dumb. And I was so excited, so happy, because I agree with him, that I made him tweet it out during the panel. And he put out the tweet, and then he had all these like responses to it. And I was just like, this is the greatest day ever. And I agree with that, because home run splits, to me, are it's so difficult to figure out if this is not noise. And it's so rare when it's not. And generally, it's just random grouping. Look, if you have 10 starts and you sift them into home and road, it's just a random distribution most of the time. So it's not really something you can hold on to, save for Tyler Molly, because that is just a ridiculous, okay, fine. Sometimes you just got to throw your hands up like, this is one instance of it, but I'm not going
to do. You have certain extreme examples in all aspects of the game that you have to take notice. Yeah.
And cores, I understand too. So when you talk about where I want them to go, first thing that comes up, park factors. And generally, I don't care that much. It's not really going to shift my rankings around, because I still feel like, well, if they're going to be good, then they're going to be good. If they're going to be bad, then they're going to be bad. And sure, there are certain ways that can pull it maybe 0.2 ERA one way or the other. But if you really get lost in those weeds, you just find yourself not really knowing what to believe anymore. And again, there are extremes to this. Oco is generally better. But then again, you also have to then face the Astros more, or maybe Safeco is helpful. But then there's all these other factors, and everything just gets messy, and I don't really touch it much. So like catcher framing was one. I remember that being like the best point ever for Dallas Keuchel, and that was a fun season. And because he was also with Grandal, and then we felt that was good. And I thought that was good, and I thought maybe that was a little bit of a point up. But once we start really going into all of those things, man, those are such small factors to the whole grand scheme of what they're actually throwing and how good they are at throwing that. The one other exception I will say is team defense. The Cardinals, I think 3 of 4 of their infielders are just won a gold glove. There's a reason that Adam Wainwright, I think, had a better season because of that. We've seen Dakota Hudson have the highest outs above average. Jack Flaherty getting super lucky with this stuff. Like, this is not a coincidence. And I do find myself thinking, okay, that's a thing that I should be taking into consideration, that these Cardinals pitchers that are good and decent and don't walk a lot of guys, they have a chance on any given night to do better because of that. And that goes into the last point, which is some teams manage their pitchers terribly for fantasy, and some of them manage them really well. Cleveland, we know this. I don't want to lean on the whole development thing. I think that's just too small of a sample, and there are a lot of guys that failed. And sure, we want to point out Cal Quantrill doing well out of nowhere, but Logan Allen didn't, and Tristan McKenzie went back and forth and everything. And it's just, and Zach Plesac faltered, and Aaron Savalius faltered. I don't really care about that, but I do care that they let them go long at games. I care that the Giants allow their guys to go long in games. I think they got lucky with a lot of their pitchers this year, but I don't think it's all of a sudden now they're an amazing developmental powerhouse. But I hate how the Rays and Dodgers treat their pitchers, and I have to treat that differently. So those are the aspects that I maybe give some tiebreakers to. Contract year is one I hear a lot. I don't care. I don't care if you're in a contract year. Like, just be good or bad. Like, are your pitches actually able to improve or not? Or so I don't think all of a sudden they're going to start caring because they're in contract year. Guys want to win all the time. These guys are incredibly competitive all the time. So I'm sure I left off other things, but I've seriously ranted too long. And asked for your permission, I still feel guilty. So I'm going to hold off now. Well, that's really the main crux of it. It's 85-90% is their actual innate ability. Then maybe there's 10% that goes into the other stuff.
Now, you talk about the extreme with splits and stuff like that, and you said the park factors don't necessarily play a big role. Would you say that, would you maybe change your tune on that when talking about a specific pitcher who has certain tendencies, a fly ball pitcher, a guy who lets up like Matt Boyd moves into, you know, Yankee Stadium, is that going to be a concern for home runs?
Yeah, but then if he goes into the Yankee Stadium, then, well, the Yankees going to change how he pitches and everything like that. Oh, so all of a sudden it's a different environment. He might get more wins. There is something to be considered about wins, too, about the winning offense. That could be a tiebreaker, too, I didn't mention. But I think we like to think there's just one thing that will change. Like, you change scenery, it's not just the park factor that changes. There's all these extra elements. We talked about Gerrit Cole leaving the Pirates, going to the Astros. PNC Park's a great park to pitch in, but the organization, the Astros, know all these other things. And to me, there's a lot of times that this stuff cancels each other out. Sometimes they do say, you know what, everything is better. Dylan Bundy getting out of the Orioles. We're all like, okay, the Orioles don't like to treat guys well and allow them to expand. And hey, Dylan Bundy did well in 2020 because of that. Like that stuff, okay, I get those points, but for the most part, I think it's a lot of just noise. And just really, if you just focus on the innate ability of the pitcher, you'll do a lot better.
So Kevin, when you're doing these drafts, though, like Nick just talked about the wins. Like I think that is in a lot of people's minds. Of course, the old adage, never chase wins and what have you. But when you're looking at when you're drafting and you're getting to a point where you have to take a pitcher and you've got two or three guys that are pretty close, like how much does like the bullpen of the team that they're on play a role in your mind? Is like how much they can hold on to their lead and they can get that win if they're on a team like the Rays where you're not guaranteed that they're going to go long enough into the game to solidify that win. How much are you thinking about that when you're drafting your starting pitchers, especially early on in a draft, rather than taking those risk factors later in a draft?
I actually consider it quite a bit. I think the most common phrase I use when discussing pitchers for fantasy baseball is we can't chase wins, but I say that all the time. We can't chase wins, but we got to take this into consideration here. So yeah, absolutely. Bullpens, ballpark factor, which I think when we were at First Pitch Arizona, Nick, Derek made the point. It's not home run splits. Take the noise out, and we can look at ballpark factors. By using home road splits, what ballparks did they play in on the road? That makes a huge difference when looking at something like that. So there are different things. Divisions. As a Royals fan, I've seen some old veterans that haven't been very good and are prone to giving up home runs come in and have some great seasons late in their career. Jason Vargas, great example, 20 wins. Nobody saw that coming.
Oh, you know, amazing. So, there's a rule named after you.
But to Nick's point, the Royals had the best defense in baseball at the time. So it's not always the thing that we think we're looking at. But I will say it a lot. We can't chase wins, but.
And I will say also, you make a good point, but yeah, the park factors themselves, but where they are playing. I do want to also talk about quickly about how, for example, a good example for me is Josiah Gray, about the situation they're in. Josiah Gray to me is a really nice chase for next year because there's no competing guys in the rotation. So I will take that into account, like volume expected for next year. Josiah Gray is going to be higher to me because I don't think the Nationals are a team that's going to hold back Josiah Gray. But if he were still on the Dodgers, then the situation's weird. And thinking about if they're a young guy or an old guy and what the team needs out of them is a huge thing that does go into the win point, because you have to be pitching more games and allowed to go longer into that game in order to get that win.
Now, Nick, you talked about earlier, like contract year not being important, but how much would you say the current contract plays into, again, their situation, whether or not Patrick Corbin's going to keep pitching no matter what, because he's being paid. They talk about this a lot with closers, like Liam Hendricks is going to be the closer in Chicago. Edwin Diaz is going to be the closer with New York, unless he really blows up because he's getting paid. How much does that play into your thought process when it comes to either how much trust you're going to put into a pitcher based on the fact that they're not going to lose their job?
Yeah, I didn't at first. It's like, what? I never even take into consideration their current contract. But I see now, competing positions, a young guy that's really good, but they paid this guy to pitch and they'll have that guy pitch instead. And we actually see that often to the chagrin of us all the time. But yeah, if they have options on a guy, be ready for him to actually get demoted. Even though Tanner Houck is doing really well, they've got other guys to fill it in at the moment and they're not going to put him in. That's certainly a good point. I think the other situation I've heard and somewhat followed Dodgers once again, Dodgeritis. It was Kenta Maeda's stipulations in his contract about how many innings he would get. As they laugh because my sound panel behind me fell. But fortunately, it's just sound foam, so it does no damage or whatever. It just lightly falls to the ground.
It barely makes a sound, so that's not...
No sound at all. It's that wonderful. But yeah, my whole room is falling apart behind me. It's an off-season project. It'll be fine, guys. But anyway, yeah, Kenta Maeda is the only really other example I can think of when considering a contract because, yeah, they definitely managed his innings later that year.
And then the last thing I want to ask a follow-up with something that you said a little bit earlier about team construct and whether it's the development or the coaching staff. Kevin, like, I'll follow up that with you. We've seen a lot of coaching changes happen already this offseason, and presumably there's going to be more that continue to happen in the next probably week or two as we get closer to the GM meetings. like, how much impact is that making on your decision making when, again, when we're talking about tiebreakers, when we're looking at two or three different pitchers, whether it's a young pitcher who's went through two or three different pitching coaches at the major league level, or a free agent going into a new environment with a new pitcher, like, how much are you diving into that as you're making these decisions?
Like you said, more of a tiebreaker thing, not a lot. And the thing about those types of situations is I don't even know if my perception of whether that is a good or bad situation is correct. So I try to toss it out. I try to take that bias completely out of it. And so I really try not to use it unless it really is the very last tiebreaker going on in a situation.
I think personally, in the back of my head, I'd actually be thinking about a little bit more about if a pitcher had a bad year and then they lose their, and they change pitching coaches, wondering if whether or not that pitcher, not a free agent, they haven't changed organizations, but now they have a new influence, a new voice in their ear, if that could assist in them turning things around. They see things a little bit differently. Nick,
I'll also listen to people I trust. Like a couple of years ago when Eno Saris said this new development staff in Seattle is going to help these guys, I would take that into consideration.
Always listen to you. That is just good advice in general.
That's probably fair. All right. Let's talk about some of the places we're in a little bit. We're just going to talk about some of the places some of these free agent pitchers could go. I want to get your take on, guys, on where you want them to go. And then we're logically dive into maybe the current rotation situations, maybe their salary constructs of each team, where they probably will go. So basically get some guesses from you guys on that. But we're going to do that right after this quick word.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. So we have quite a bit of starting pitching free agents out there going into this year. Everybody talks about how deep the shortstop free agent class is going into the 2022 season, but starting pitching is no joke. So I've broken down, you guys got a list in front of you. You're not going to talk about everybody. I did not count them, but there's probably about 50, 60 some odd free agents, at least possible starting pitching free agents. We're going to talk about a couple aces, a couple guys who are returning from injury, a couple guys in my tier that I called could just as easily retire. I don't think any of them will. No, one or two of them might. A couple guys who are looking to get paid, and then some wild cards that you guys can throw out there as well. Let's start at the top. A couple of aces out there, or you know, could be or should be aces. We got Clayton Kershaw, who possibly could fit into the returning from injury category as well, but I threw him in here for now. Robbie Ray, who was provided a qualifying offer. No result on that yet at the time of this recording. Max Scherzer, Carlos Rodon, and Kevin Gausman. So let's start, because we've got a couple guys in San Francisco. Let's just start in San Francisco with Kevin Gausman. So Kevin, I'm going to start with you here, because we were talking about this before the podcast. I'm like, we're going to talk about free agents. You're like, all right, so we're going to talk about the entire San Francisco Giants rotation beyond Logan Webb. So let's start with Kevin Gausman. First and foremost, like he had that resurgence in San Francisco. They gave him the qualifying offer last year. He took it. He got that 1 year. Did just as well, if not better. Now he's probably looking to get paid. Where do you want him to go, and like, in what fashion is it, where do you think he could go where it would actually improve the likelihood that you would be drafting him in one of these early drafts?
I'd really like to see him go right back to San Francisco. So sometimes when we see guys have successful seasons, I don't need to know exactly why it was. So I don't want to see too much change. Because like with the other aspects we were talking about earlier, I may be wrong about why I think things went well or didn't go well. So as little of changes as possible when things are going well, the more comfortable I am. So I would really like to see him back in San Francisco. And I don't know if there's many places that I'd rather see him land.
Yeah, Gossman, he'll be 31. This will be his age 31 season. I can only imagine he'll be looking to get a long-term deal and or at least a couple years added on to there into his mid-30s. So I with the amount of openings that San Francisco might have in their rotation, do you think they'd want to bring back at least one or two of those guys that they already know and that they already trust and they've already put some time and effort into it? So I see what you're saying there. I do wonder whether or not I wonder if San Francisco might be looking at the market the same way they had been the last 2 or 3 years, where they're looking for that reclamation project like Kevin Gossman, like somebody that they might be able to spend a little bit less money on and get just as much out of. How much of a factor do you see that, Nick, as teams utilize their payroll in the ways that they have been, and whether or not you think San Francisco might just say, all right, no, we threw a dart. It worked. Let's hold on to this piece.
If they expect in any way for them to get as lucky as they did this past year with their rotation, that's just foolish. They know that. They know that they're not necessarily going to get. They lucked out on essentially peak Alex Wood. They lucked out on Logan Webb figuring it out, adding a ton of movement to his sinker and going sinker having one of the most dropped sinkers out there. That is vertical drop on it. Like crazy. You had Kevin Gausman not even do last year, but improve upon it, which is crazy because could have even been better. Yeah, this whole he had a new child in the middle of the year and it messed him up a little bit, actually. There were some scares about it. And it was what he did in 2020, but better, where his fastball had absurd 75% strike rate, which is just unheard of on a fastball. And then you have a 24% swing strike rate on your splitter, and that's just crazy good. I don't think you need me to tell you how good that is. You get strikes with fastballs, and then you have one of the better whiff secondary pitches. Great. You're going to do that again. Awesome. And this is what you did in 2020, but better. So they're not going to get this lucky. Oh, yeah. Anthony Descofani. Oh, yeah. That was a good thing, too. And I have to think now, because they don't have too much on the books. They have guys coming off of it. Gausman is the person that they should spend on. Kevin Goddard. Yeah. Why wouldn't they want to go after that? If I had to make one guess, though, of that sneaky starter that the Giants would take a chance on, it would be Danny Duffy. I feel like I already know him as a Giant, even though he's never been a Giant. Danny Duffy to me just feels like a Giant. And I wouldn't be surprised if they took a chance on, because if you remember in April, Danny Duffy was really good again. And yes, he did go through injuries, but that's something that San Francisco has been okay with, taking on that risk, and it's worked out for them. So I think Gausman's going to go back to San Francisco, like Kevin said. And maybe we'll see some Danny Duffy.
All right. So another ace on the list. We talked about him mostly at the end of the season as it seemed as though he was starting to run a little bit out of gas. And it's Carlos Rodon with the White Sox. Obviously, a long tenure of, you know, injury concerns throughout his, you know, early career. Finally put it together and showed that ace potential at the age 29. The White Sox they're like most other teams. Like, you can never have too much depth in starting pitching, but that's not to say that they have a complete clear opening. I wonder if he's going to go somewhere else. Nick, I'm going to start with you on this one. Like, you talked a lot about Rodon, whether how he was losing velocity toward the end of the season.
Did anyone notice that? Nobody. I put out a tweet about him losing velocity at the end of the year.
I wonder if somebody might have made a comment about that.
Oh, man. That was cool. If you don't know, Carlos Rodon's wife or fiance, I don't remember. I think it's wife. I responded saying that he's just saving his energy for October, which is great. I understand that. He was still throwing 93, and the reason that Carlos Rodon was so good earlier this season is because he was sitting, not hitting, sitting 96 and 97 at times, and he wasn't anymore, and that was a concern for all of us playing fantasy baseball, which, and rightly so, it was. I'm so conflicted, because it's Rodon when he's throwing hard, which he only did this year and not any other year, 93.5 mile per hour average at best before this season, and we're talking 95, 96, 97 for Rodon this year. He's amazing. He deserves it. He deserves all the success when he's throwing that hard. Clearly, his body wasn't ready for that. and for a full season, only 132 innings this year. I mean, really, it's about 100 or so of him at that max effort. I hope that he can do that again. I would be very concerned if I were to sign him for a long-term deal, considering he showed such obvious signs of fatigue. It might be a case of a two-year deal or something that might happen for Rodon. I think, personally, if Rodon feels that, no, this is who I am, I would 100% be betting on myself in a single-year deal and saying, no, look, I can do a full season with this. I can do 150-plus innings at this velocity and this success, and it'll be a win-win situation there. And I can imagine so many teams, you're probably going to hear me say all these millions of teams over and over again, of like, oh yeah, it'd be great on the Yankees. I'm terrible at this. I'm really bad at predicting where they go. Danny Duffy's a fun one, but when it comes to Carlos Rodon, I think everybody's going to be in to some degree. And I am very curious where he does land. I don't really think it's going to affect my fantasy stock in him.
I think what would make a difference is if your theory is correct, where if he's going to bet on himself and take a 1 or 2 year deal,
right.
Rodon didn't get a qualifying offer, so he's pretty much can go anywhere he wants without any kind of strings attached.
Offer him a qualifying offer?
No, he wasn't on the list.
That's crazy. Maybe they couldn't have. I don't know. I wonder if that's the case because they signed. I don't think they could have because they signed him to a 1 year deal. It was after it was
no,
because like
Robbie Ray got the qualifying offer from Toronto.
Yeah.
See, what I do believe I know? He was eligible. I think, but Nick, I agree with you, and I think maybe the White Sox are planning on offering him a deal, but not $18.4 million. If it's going to be a 1 year deal, it might be slightly less than that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody we're going to talk about in a little bit. Clayton Kershaw didn't get a qualifying offer either. We'll get into that a little bit.
Shocking to me, but yeah.
But
what do I know?
My comment about Rodon is that since if he's only 29, if he does want to take that 1 year deal to prove himself like Robbie Ray did with Toronto, I can totally see that happening. And I think what that does is that completely opens up where he would sign. I think he could pretty much sign anywhere, not worrying about if it's a good team, if they're going to make the playoffs. Or
come on
like
down,
that.
Pirates. It's yeah, fine.
I just need a stage. Let me do my
thing. He goes to a lesser team and he's performing well. He's getting traded in July to the contender.
That's the thing, though. So if I were the Pirates, won't get the qualifying offer. That's a great call, Kevin. Yeah, he wouldn't get a qualifying offer because he'd be dealt. But it would. Yeah, that'd be interesting if a bad team signed just for that purpose. It's what the Rangers tried to do a couple of years ago. They got all these high upside guys just for the sake of maybe dealing them. And hey, they just dealt Kyle Gibson after all. But that'd be very interesting. I don't know if I want to see Rodon on a bad team just for the sake of Rodon. Like, you deserve to be on a good team, man. You're really good. Like, you don't deserve to suffer.
Now, that little tinfoil hat theory, Kevin, do you think about that at all when you're drafting at this point where he could land on a bad team for this 1 year deal? Does that kind of push him down your queue list when you're at that point of looking at him in a draft?
Not somebody like Rodon going at that area of drafts. You can't chase wins, but I don't get to the butt till later in drafts typically. So I don't think that would affect my opinion much. And some of the lesser teams throw in, once again, not home road slips, but ballpark factors, playing some pretty nice ballparks like the Pirates that Nick brought up earlier.
Sure. I think that's the name of the podcast, by the way, is I Don't Get to the Butts Till Later.
Oh, wow.
So let's talk about the other guy on this list who did not get a qualifying offer, and that's Clayton Kershaw. Nick obviously has thoughts. And so Kershaw, obviously, all the theories are out there right now that the Dodgers know more about his health than everybody else does. And that's why he didn't get a qualifying offer. He's 34 years old. We'll see what kind of contract he ends up getting. It's nice. Again, he doesn't have the strings attached, so he could go anywhere. Can anybody on this podcast with a straight face picture Clayton Kershaw in any other uniform besides the Dodgers?
No, that's just not right. It's just not right in the world. I don't know. There are certain players I feel it's just not.
That's who they are.
Yeah, this guy's a Dodger, man. He's a Dodger. I feel like Vin Scully is still calling his games. It's not right to me if he puts on the pinstripes or something like that. Don't do that. The Red Sox would 100% sign Kershaw, I think. And that just doesn't feel right.
No. My question would be, who's more likely to leave their current roster? Is that Freddie Freeman or Clayton Kershaw? And it's that'd be a very difficult poll to put out there because I don't know that anybody would actually want to vote
Kershaw.
In it.
I think the Dodgers don't really care about that legacy factor at all. And they would be more inclined to move on from the injury-riddled Septembers and Octobers that they've had to deal with. And they said, look, we've got Bueller, we've got others and friends, sorry, Julio Urias and all. And they'll be fine without necessarily Kershaw taking a chance on that. They want something a little bit more stable. Freddie Freeman, to me, is just, now you're staying in Atlanta, bro. We know this. You're staying in Atlanta. They're going to pay him the money.
So, Kevin, again, back to these early drafts, though, are you playing into this idea that he didn't get a qualifying offer because the Dodgers know he's more hurt than he lays on? Or is that, are you less concerned about that?
There is nothing I'm more sure of anything on this list for tonight's podcast than I will not draft Clayton Kershaw unless he is signed by the Dodgers. Because there is no way they don't give him a qualifying offer and give up that free draft pick unless they're scared they're going to get stuck with him for a year at $18.4 million. Unless they just know all along they're signing him to a 2 or 3 year deal. It didn't matter. We don't even have to fill out the paperwork for a qualifying offer because it's not going to happen. He's coming back here anyway. So with the injury concerns, with it being the Dodgers, with that legacy Nick was talking about, unless he signs with the Dodgers, he will not be on a single one of my fantasy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't normally put much weight on how organizations treat players to how I feel about it, but that is a good point to me. I think I'm just going to be avoiding Clayton Kershaw in general. This is something I've found myself doing more so recently is we get this idea that, you know, with 100 players or 100 pitchers that are generally in the pool of who we would be picking, that everybody has a price and there's that feeling. But if you go into drafts just saying, I don't care, I will not draft this player, you will be okay because there are 99 other pitchers that you can get. And if you go into that mentality of, look, I'm just going to not put myself in this gut feeling that I don't want to do, then just don't. You know, you're going to be okay allowing someone else to get that value that you're missing. There are 12 or 15 or however many that are in that room with you, just don't get that guy. So, for me, Clayton Kershaw to me is just, you know what? I'm probably not going
to
do it.
Yeah. And on draft day, you've got enough to think about. And so if you can find a way to take something off of your mind, I'm on board with that. All right. So there's two more guys on here. We'll start with the younger guy who did get the qualifying offer. Robbie Ray will be age 30. Toronto did give him the qualifying offer. The mindset that I'm getting out of kind of just the group think is that Toronto's just going to re-sign all of their guys, whether they offered them a qualifying offer or not. I don't necessarily think this is a given with Robbie Ray specifically. I think no matter how much exposure he got in Dunedin, Buffalo, Toronto, with those very nice pants and the t-shirt that came along with it, I think he signed a one-year deal with Toronto for a reason. And it wasn't just because he liked the Canadian countryside. I think he did it, to your point, Nick, earlier with Carlos Rodon. He did it so that he could prove, hey, I can do this. I can, change everything about me for the most part. And other teams are going to get noticed. I'm going to get paid. I think Robbie Ray could very well re-sign with Toronto, but I don't think he's giving any kind of like hometown discount there. And personally, as a avid Robbie Ray fantasy manager, I would love to see him go somewhere else. I'd love to see him face off against new competition outside the AL East, outside of Toronto. And whether it's another hitter-friendly ballpark, I know you're talking about park factors not being that much of a factor, but I think especially with Robbie Ray giving up his kind of home runs that he was and getting the ball in the zone a little bit more, I would like to see him elsewhere as the final piece or that kind of like that ace piece that a contender needs to put him over the hump as well. So, I mentioned this in passing with you, Nick, on the corner as we were going through our draft, because of course I drafted Robbie Ray in that mock draft. I'd like to see him in San Francisco. I think everybody would like to see a lot of pitchers in San Francisco for obvious reasons, but I like to see him there as that ace, whether that's side by side with Gausman or not, I'm not sure. But at age 30, I think Robbie Ray is going to get paid regardless of where he goes. Kevin, where are you looking? What's your thoughts on that?
I really don't know what to think. I agree with you that I don't think it's this given that he's going back to Toronto. I think they offer him the qualifying offer, and that might be their offer, and that be it. They might not be even in on a multi-year deal because I just can't get over the walk rate prior to 2021. He cut it almost in half in 2021. And Steamer projects him to regress back just 2% higher than it was this year. Is it really going to stay that good? I don't know when it's been so much higher for the all other 7 years of his career. It's awesome that he made those changes. And it's awesome that and the success that followed, it absolutely makes sense. I just don't know that he's going to continue to throw at 6.9% walk rate up there when it's been over 15% so many other times in his career.
Okay. I don't think it's going to be a 10% plus walk rate again for Robbie Ray. 7%, all right, I can understand. Maybe it's going to be like an 8, 8.5, something like that. Robbie Ray was a nibbler before. Someone that said, I need to go on the edges of the plate and I need to do this constantly. Otherwise, I'm going to get crushed and things are going to be bad and so on and so forth. He got rid of that anxiety completely. He started throwing so many more strikes with his four-seamer. It made a huge difference. We had a 70% strike rate on his four-seamer this past year. And what we've seen in the past are terrible rates, essentially. We're talking around like 50% at times on that four-seamer. It's not what you want. It's not what you want before. And I don't think he's going to regress all the way back to that. I think also obviously going to the Giants is going to be great. I also think that he's won the Cy Young by the time you know this, or maybe not. They haven't come out. I don't know. We're talking about the Cy Young here, okay? If it's not the Cy Young, I'm shocked. We all expect some regression from Robbie Ray. 284 ERA should not be around that. Maybe it is, but I think in all likelihood we're going to say, no, he's like a 320, 350 ERA or something like that. And you know what? That 105 whip, he had a 90% left on base race two and 268 BAB. Okay, fine. We're all going to agree on like a 112 whip or something like that. That's amazing. And he did it over 193 innings this year. Normally when we see these kind of changes from a guy, we're grasping at the second half or these couple months or so. That's a full season. That's really a guy that made the change, and that was it for the entire year. Yes, he had some bumps, as every pitcher does every single season. Otherwise, they'd have a one ERA, and it was fine. Then he corrected it. It wasn't all of a sudden a downward trend or something along those lines. I think Robbie Ray is essentially a top 20 guy moving forward for a while until something dramatic happens. I have him, I think, at 10 for next year, something like that. And playing for the Jays, if you do this playing for the Jays, it doesn't really matter where you land. It would be great if it's San Francisco. It makes us a little bit more anxiety-free. But Robbie Ray is going to be dope next year, and I'm excited for him to get paid.
Yeah, and I think the one worry about leaving Toronto would be you're leaving a very good ball club. You're leaving a team that can get you those wins, that can push you into the Robbie Ray shown, and he can go 6-7 innings on a regular basis. So you're not putting as much pressure on the bullpen to hold those leads. And the worry would be if he's going to leave that and go to a team that's less good. But he's not in the same situation as he was last year, or that Carlos Rodon finds himself this year. He's looking to get paid. He's looking for a long-term deal. And so a team that's going to give him that long-term deal, the Rangers aren't going to give him that long-term deal. Like, that's just not where they're at. So I would venture to guess that he ends up with a contender at the very least.
Yeah, one thing I do want to say, I want to correct myself because I know nobody is yelling at me to correct this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I didn't mean he had a 60% zone rate on the four-seamer. That used to be around 50%. Strike rate was 70%. It was around 60% before, not 50. I know no one actually caught that, but I think that's important to outline that I'm not just making up stats.
The integrity.
Yeah, it's the integrity. He had a near 13% swing strike rate on the four-seamer this year. It was always under 10%. In the past 3 years. This is a new person, and he did over almost 200 innings. I think we really need to accept that.
We're not worried about the over 90% left on base either?
Of course we are, but that doesn't mean he's all of a sudden... That's what I'm saying. He's like
No, I'm not saying he's going to be horrible. I'm just saying I'm a little worried here.
Look, if you were the same, if you were a 284 ERA with a 105 whip and a 32% K rate over 193 innings, he would not be the 10th pitcher off the board.
All right, let's talk about the elder statesman of this group. Max Scherzer has been around for quite a while, but age 37, free agent after being traded to the Dodgers, not eligible for the qualifying offer, obviously did not get one, so he can go anywhere he wants. Am I wrong to say that I'd like to see him gets re-signed back with the Tigers and be the ace of that staff, helping that young staff, being back with that team as they are coming up with their high-end prospects, with their offensive prospects. They got a nice new defensive catcher there as well. I would like to see him back in Detroit and shove and just return to where he was. I don't really care where Max goes. I don't think anybody cares where he actually goes unless he goes to Colorado. That would just be funny. It'd be like, hey, I've done everything else. I'm just going to show that I can win this for my own ego. But
going back to Detroit is that same way, right? Like it's the return of LeBron almost.
Right.
That'd be so good. That'd be so great.
They obviously have openings. They have a young crew that he could.
Is this the time that the Tigers are spending, though? I feel like they got another year until that.
I think all the rumors around the fact that Carlos Correa could end up signing there for a long-term deal with obvious connections with the manager and what have you.
I would love this, because then we could stop talking about how bad the AL Central is completely. Then we got to move on to the NL Central. Like, guys, you got to get it together. Now the Reds are going to be selling and all that stupid stuff. But if the Tigers were good again, I'll be so down for that.
Have the Tigers re-sign Verlander and Max Scherzer.
Yes!
In the same.
Oh, my God.
And you asked about catcher framing and things earlier. And it's not just the framing, but an overall defender and guy coming in to control a staff like Barnhart and bringing those guys all in. That would be really fun to watch.
He'd play a role of like a player coach and obviously the ace of that staff. It'd be nice. Nick, do you have any other thoughts on, does it matter where Scherzer goes? Is he just going to be Max Scherzer?
He's going to be great. Obviously, we're worried about the injuries. And at some point, the 37-year-old has shown some fatigue now. And it's, okay, is this actually going to be 180 innings or not? But you're still going to get awesome Max Scherzer. And that's a cool thing.
All right. So I mentioned Justin Verlander. We got three guys in our injury tier. Two of them got qualifying offers. So it'd be, I think it'd be a little surprising to see them both re-sign somewhere else. That's Noah Syndergaard with the Mets. But then Chris Archer came back from thoracic outlet syndrome with the Rays. Obviously did not get a qualifying offer there. I'm going to go on the assumption that Noah Syndergaard is going to end up staying with the Mets for 1 year on that qualifying offer as he comes back from Tommy John. But Justin Verlander really seems like there's a strong possibility he's going to test the market. There was a report of he had a little outing the other day. He's hitting 94, 95 in that outing as a couple teams were present for that. And so not to say that he won't stay with Houston, but I could see him testing the market. So, Kevin, as you're considering to draft these guys, and I know that at least in one draft, you drafted a few of them in a best ball league, but we talked about that on the last episode. It is the fact that there are all these variables with Verlander, with Syndergaard coming back from their injuries, even Chris Archer to a much lesser extent. How much is that playing into your mind as you're considering drafting these guys? You don't know where they're going to be combined with the fact that they have to come back from their major injuries.
I think Verlander is the easy one as long as we continue to get good news. And like you said, he was throwing for a bunch of teams, and I think he was doing that again today. We haven't gotten any news on it yet, but I think that was occurring here on the Monday the 8th when we are recording. So that will be good to watch. Verlander, like Scherzer, as you guys were saying, I don't care where he goes if we think he's healthy. Syndergaard, the Mets did offer him the qualifying offer, which gives me some comfort. We did see him at the end of the season. My problem with Syndergaard is I'm only taking him where I've gotten him really late because he wasn't very good before he got hurt. He hadn't been very good for a while. Archer, man, every time he starts to look better and get healthy or start to look healthy, every time he starts to look healthy, he starts to look like, ooh, maybe he's pretty good still. And something comes up again, and now at the end of this season, it was more inflammation in the hip, I believe. If he looks healthy, he's going to be absolutely free if he looks healthy, regardless of where he goes. And might be worth a shot late, especially in a 750 deep drafted hole team. But place where I'll be looking at him.
Yeah, that deep. Definitely Chris Archer is in consideration there. He could be effective again. I like what you said about Noah Syndergaard because there's so many weird factors here. One, I do think the Mets that Syndergaard is going to accept the qualifying offer, bet on himself for $19 million or whatever. Sure. Yeah, okay. That sounds good to me because a lot of people are scared right now. Noah Syndergaard said that he's not going to throw sliders because it hurts his elbow. That slider is what made you really good.
Right.
And if you're not throwing that, when he returned, he wasn't throwing. He was throwing changeups and fastballs. Didn't even throw the curveball. Maybe the curveball hurts too. I don't know. And I've talked a lot about Noah Syndergaard over the years. I remember being so amped when he came up, one of the most impressive MLB debuts I've seen from a starter. I remember freaking out over his fastballs in the playoffs in 2015. I still don't quite understand how people weren't freaking out about him more during the entire 2015, because it was just unbelievable how good he was and no one seemed to care at the time. But then 2018, I remember talking about, hey, he always has these high BABIPs and it's not just like luck. It's because he's not a pitcher. He's not someone who like goes around the zone and says, this is how I'm going to sequence you to death and put these pitches right where they should be. I'm just going to throw these pitches over the plate. And that's not great. So he wasn't really this elite starter before the Tommy John surgery with that slider. Now he doesn't have it. I'm terrified with Noah Syndergaard moving forward. And Justin Verlander, keep in mind, when you hear the 94-95, you think, oh, that's what he was at before, 94-95 on his fastball. This was hitting, not sitting. So track that as we go. I will say, though, generally, if this is like the first audition, there's time to ramp up. Guys do. This is November. It's not February. It's not even March. February or January. So there's time. We want to see sitting. That's a very important term when it comes to these tweets. Not hitting. Sitting is what we want. I don't care about hitting. Hitting is like, whatever. You can hit 97 once, max effort, and all of a sudden now you're at 92, 93. So I definitely monitor that with Justin Verlander. But yeah, man, Adam, I just want him in Detroit now. Now you've said this. And it's just, that's all I want.
There are two clear openings in the Tigers rotation. I'm just saying that.
Casey Mize, get out of here.
They've got options, like you said.
Sure.
No, right now Roster Resource has Tyler Alexander and Joey Wentz as their 4-5. So I'm just saying there are
Joey
openings.
Joey Wentz?
Yeah. A corner Joey roster Wentz? Recess.
I don't even know Joey Wentz.
That's the wrong Wentz.
Yeah, I know there is a football player at Wentz. I don't even remember the first name. I think it's a C.
I mean,
Carson. I got there.
You got there.
No, thanks.
This is not a football podcast.
No, it's not. Sorry, please continue.
We're going to know. I'm with you guys. I think Syndergaard is going to take the bet on himself for $19 million. Why wouldn't he, especially since he has, you know, no background in the last year and a half or 2 years to like stand on. But Verlander, I don't think Verlander, if he doesn't accept that qualifying offer, I don't think he's going to sign until before spring training. I think he's going to wait. I think he's going to figure out exactly where he wants to go. He has that year off, but he has an entire career to everybody can lean on. So I could see him waiting in the wings and not playing, not like Clemens did or Kimbrel did those times where they came back mid-season, but I could see him waiting until February or March to sign, especially with the CBA, if it's not done by, you know, December 1st.
More opportunities for Verlander to showcase that he can sit at a higher velocity. So I think that's a really good point, Adam.
So I don't think this is going to be clarified in time for quote-unquote draft season, February, March draft seasons as well, or at least as much as probably we would like it to be. All right, there's a couple other elder statesmen. Talk about them as a big group, and I want to get your guys' take on whether or not we should care if they retire or not, to be honest. At least a few of them. Zach Greinke has said he plans on pitching again next year. I think he's 38. It'll be his age 38 season. Verlander says he wants to pitch until he's 45. He wants to pull like a Tom Brady type of situation over there. But like Greinke, I think a lot of people were like just curious to know where his head would be at, whether or not he's, all right, no, I've had enough. I think if the Astros had won the World Series, I'm still in that camp where I could totally have seen Greinke going off into the sunset after getting that ring. He said publicly that he would like to pitch for a National League team recently. So
doesn't he know that the DH is going to happen?
He just wants
no to. No one tell Zach Greinke?
I think these will be teams that have been used to letting the pitcher hit because they had to. And so he'll have an easier time convincing them to let him hit, at least as a pinch hitter on his throwing days, maybe come in as a reliever, pinch hit the next inning, and then you can take him out.
Absolutely.
So Zach Greinke, J.A. Happ, age 39, Corey Kluber, age 36, The youngest one on this group, though, after the season he had, I mean, I don't think anybody would be terribly surprised, though I'm sure he'll, you know, continue. Rich Hill specifically said he's not retiring at age 42. John Lester finishing off his time with the Cardinals after being traded age 38. And then Johnny Cueto, his $22 million shockingly did not get picked up at an age 36 season.
Unreal.
Still had a the thing with those is that he still had a $5 million buyout. So it's like you had to pay him $5 million to not pitch.
So that's essentially $17 million then, right? Am I doing that right?
That's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
We can do math.
Yeah. Rich Hill said that he doesn't want to retire. And I put that in my notes. You're reading the thing I said. I imagine someone will take a chance on Rich Hill. I was shocked how many innings he had this year. But with all of these, I think you guys will agree. Like, Corey Kluber just threw a no-hitter this year, so he'll have something. He'll pitch. That's fine. J. Happ and Lester. Oh, man. And then Zach Greinke. I think all of us would just be sad if Zach Greinke didn't pitch.
Yeah, I think Greinke was just that player on the Astros that feel however you want about the Astros organization. But I think Greinke and like Dusty Baker were the common like good guys that everybody was rooting for to get that ring.
And everyone else we hated. So thankfully, Atlanta won. Sorry, I'm someone that wants Astros to be cursed now from 2017. I want this to be like the curse of the trash can. I want that.
Is there anybody on here, Kevin, that you're looking at, whether it's in a draft and hold, that you think could come back and put up innings or be a placeholder at any somewhat reasonable price? Or are you just of the adage, like, either one, they're not producing, or two, they're just too old for you to trust at this stage of their career?
Johnny Cueto is a little bit interesting to me because he's been throwing the same velocity for over five seasons now. And he still had above average ERA or below average, however you want to look at it, as bad as a 4.08 ERA sounds. That was better than league average and put up 114 innings. So I would pay attention to where he goes and what the rotation looks like and things of that nature. But I think I'm to the point where when we start looking at guys like this, like we talked about all season, Adam, I'd rather have Brent Suter. I'd rather have McHugh. I'd rather have those guys in my lineup.
Brent Suter. There's a name I did not expect to hear today.
We like our middle relievers better than bottom line starters.
Colin McHugh, to me, is one of the more underrated pitchers of the past like 3-4 years. I mean, the guy learned a new slider from Brad Peacock, and it's been amazing. He was good as a starter back in, I believe, 2018 or 2019 when he had 12 starts. Like, Colin McHugh is pretty good. Brent Suter. Oh.
He was a valid piece to many teams throughout, at least through the mid part of last year.
Is that right?
Just the amount of innings. You could just trust that he was going to get you anywhere between 3 and 7 innings in any given week because they were just driving him.
And at a point in August, he was second in the league in wins.
That's true.
That's unbelievable.
But you don't trace wins. So.
Right.
No, you don't. But Brent Suter. Oh, man. Suter or later, that was going to bite you. And I've made that joke so many times. And I will continue to do so because it's Brent Suter.
Every time he comes up.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I did not expect that. Johnny Cueto, I think that's a really good call, though. Where he does sign, he's going to be a Toby type. He's going to, and really when I say that, he'll be allowed to go 100 pitches. It's kind of like that for Happ and Lester, I think, but I think even they have more of a leash than Cueto does. The changeup's still an effective pitch for him. The four-seamer actually starting to get whiffs, 12% swing strike rate out of it this year, which is cool. Normally doesn't do that. It's on 7 or 6, and he actually elevated effectively. And then he had a slider that he was able to get to called strikes with a good amount. It's nothing exciting that we write home about, but you're talking about 750 player leagues, my lord. Johnny Cueto is going to be a very sneaky volume guy because that matters more in those leagues. And 12 teamers, obviously not, but 15 and deeper. Yeah, Cueto should be on your radar.
I'll be waiting for the time that Johnny Cueto ends up being your streamer pick of the day because he's under 20% rostered.
I can't wait. But name recognition. Lester at one point was like at 60% this year. Ugh. And I couldn't. I don't know. It's so funny to me trying to guess like rostership rates. And the public are weird sometimes. And that's fine. Sometimes they know more than I do about this stuff. But yeah, Johnny Cueto will always be more rostered than he should because he's Johnny Cueto.
Sure. Yeah, that's probably fair. He may never make that streamer list then. All right, so there's a couple guys we alluded to earlier who I think will be looking to get paid. Alex Wood, as we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, Steven Matz and Marcus Stroman. Steven Matz did not receive a qualifying offer, though he did receive a multi-year offer from the Blue Jays, which he has declined. At least it's been reported. Marcus Stroman obviously got the qualifying offer last year, took it after sitting out pretty much all of 2020. And Alex Wood has been bounced around, obviously, as Nick, as you talked about earlier, San Francisco got everything they could out of him for one season. So the question I think I really want is who is going to act of this group, if only one of them is going to get, quote, paid? Nick, who do you think is going to be and what kind of team do you think is going to pay up for him?
Oh, it's Stroman. It's got to be Stroman. He's the guy that goes 170 plus innings for three of the last 4 years. And he's someone who always beats his FIP and his ERA is always like he's a guy that you get to stabilize your rotation. You feel a lot more secure that, okay, with Stroman's pitching, we have a chance to win every single day. It's not he's not going to be like a 4 or 5 year. He's going to give you a good chance to win. Now, for fantasy purposes, it's not really something that I want to go after for. I've talked about endlessly with that. I am always worried that his whip is going to be 125 to 130. It was 113 this year, but I don't know if I borrow that. And there's still some development that could happen with his slider and cutter that has its moments of being great, but then disappears. So maybe the splitter shows up. But overall, Stroman's the best one. Alex Wood is so exciting. And he was throwing 91, 92 this year. And slider was really good. Changeup wasn't, though. And he's much more of an injury risk than I think any of the other two. And Steven Matz is just, I think he won the Flenderson Award. That is the most Toby of Tobies this year because it worked. It's like there's a reason why everyone is a major leaguer. And Steven Matz showed like, yeah, there are days that my curveball will get strikes and my change will get outs and my fastball finds enough of the zone to mess people up. And that's Steven Matz in a nutshell. He's never going to excite you. He has potentially a 4-7 ERA in him. But he should be on a team and for a couple of years as just a number five.
We talked about at the beginning of the show about the small little factors that could play a role. How much are you hoping that, or how much of an influence is it going to make on you if Stroman, who notoriously ground ball type pitcher, induces a lot of ground balls, goes to a place like St. Louis, as we mentioned, just won a bunch of gold gloves for their infield, or a team like that is going to be able to help him out in that realm? Is that not going to play a factor in making the decision in drafting him, or do you play that in your head a lot more than I'm letting on?
I would just hope that it's not one of the extremes, like the other extreme when he did go to the Mets in the first place is, oh, how can you sign Marcus Stroman with this infield defense? And with your example of the Cardinals, it would be, oh, how great he's going to be with the Cardinals and this infield defense. So I think that would affect draft day cost in either direction. So pretty much anywhere else other than the extremes, I wouldn't consider it at all. And it would be unfortunate somewhere like the Cardinals because he's someone that I'd like to have on my fantasy teams. But I think that narrative, we would hear about it. It would be on MLB radio. It would be on every podcast.
But I'd be so excited for
him. This great defense
him.
That he's got.
I wanted to go there.
He would end up being overpriced in my
mind.
It's
a match made in heaven.
it would be
man
great.
Go and have a great season, Kevin. I'm gonna is this in the best way? I don't care about your fantasy team, Kevin. I want Marcus Stroman to do so well in St. Louis and blossom into the beautiful flower he deserves to be. I don't want him to go to a team that just doesn't treat him right and make this talent not appreciated fully and to its fullest. Like, let him go to St. Louis. I would love that. I think that's what Fast said on the podcast like a month ago. That he suggested that would be an opportunity, considering that the Cardinals need to sign at least one guy and they have some money to play around with it. 100% the perfect match made in heaven. Oh, don't throw that juju out there.
I would love to watch it as well.
All right, great. End of sentence.
I think Kevin's just saying that he's not going to end up with Stroman because it's not going to influence his
99 other pitchers. 99 other pitchers, Kevin.
Right.
Stroman's not one of them. All right. All right. So we got a couple of miscellaneous guys, but I'm going to group these three together, or two, because one of them's already signed. And I feel like there's a couple guys out there that are now free agents. They're free agents at the right time in their career as far as their age goes. They just haven't been treated that well with the team that they've been on, or they haven't produced that. However you want to, whatever narrative you want to use. John Gray, not offered a qualifying offer by the Rockies because Rockies. Age 30 season, looking to go off somewhere else besides Colorado for obvious reasons. And then Dylan Bundy, age 29 season. Going to see if there's another option for him outside of Baltimore, probably outside of Los Angeles. But then there's Andrew Heaney, who, as of taping, has been the only starter who has actually signed a deal. And you guys can correct me if you've seen something that I haven't. But he signed a, I think, an $8.5 million deal with the Dodgers. So I'm curious to hear your guys' take on whether or not the Dodgers can save Andrew Heaney, whether he's the next Robbie Ray project, which I've seen tweets about, whether or not I have my own theory that I think a lot of people are talking about Andrew Heaney is now, quote unquote, replacing Clayton Kershaw in the rotation. What if Andrew Heaney is just replacing Kenley Jansen in the bullpen instead? That he wondering if he could actually play up in that kind of a role. Nick, I know you have thoughts, so I'm curious. I'm going to start with you here.
I never have thoughts about
the Dodgers redeem Andrew Heaney.
That's possible. The Robbie Ray stuff, I think, is only apparent because it's a guy who's on a similar deal and is a lefty with strikeout potential. But if anyone actually, if we're talking about Robbie Ray, what was the problem with Robbie Ray? As we talked about, he was nibbling before. Then he threw a ton of strikes in the zone, and that completely changed who he was. And that's not the story for Andrew Heaney. The story of Andrew Heaney is that he makes too many mistakes with pitches inside the zone. He actually needs to nibble a little bit better. And the curveball and changeup aren't enough to keep batters honest so that they do jump on that fastball a good amount, and it becomes a massive home run problem. It does make me wonder if he is. That's the first I've heard of him being going possibly like a reliever, Kenley Jansen. I think that's an interesting idea. But then he really does need to step up in some way that makes it so the fastball's harder and then isn't as much of a home run threat. I hope that the Dodgers can fix him. I think Dodgeritis is going to exist for him. I would be very shocked if all of a sudden Andrew Heaney is realized in the way that we've seen other guys shift teams and all of a sudden blossom properly. Heaney doesn't seem like he's primed for that. I guarantee you there will be one start this year, maybe in April, maybe his first, second, third, one of those starts where Heaney looks great. He looks amazing. It's a 27% strikeout rate coming out. It's 8 strikeouts, 5 innings, 1 earned run, no walks. Everyone says, oh my God, this is it. I remember even this past year, Andrew Heaney was throwing 94 instead of 92 against the White Sox for the first 3 innings. Looked amazing. And then all of a sudden he allowed 3 more home runs or something crazy like that. And he got bounced before the 5th ended. And that's Andrew Heaney. He's the most legit cherry bomb you'll ever find. Do not do this. Do not just, there's a reason why his initials are AH, because that's the sound you make when you watch him start. You get frustrated. Okay. So I don't think that the Dodgers are just going to fix Andrew Heaney.
To start the season, the Dodgers host the Rockies. They host the Diamondbacks. And then, of course, they travel to Colorado for a 3-game set.
So I would imagine, though, he won't get that second one, because if he's going to start, he's going to be only in that second series and he'll skip. You know, he'll have the series after that. He'll start the next one.
Yeah.
So you're lucky with
that. The Twins after that.
Andrew Heaney, I talk in 12 teamers, tasting you're way better than me in 15 teamers or so. TGFBI winner in 2020, if you didn't know, which I didn't hear in this podcast for some reason, for every other podcast, but not this one. I don't know why, but 12 teamers, Andrew Heaney is someone I do not draft, and I observe from afar to see if there's any discernible changes over the first month, and do not get honeypotted in the beginning of the year.
That's probably the safe bet. Kevin, are you interested to know where John Gray or Dylan Bundy go come when you get to that point in the draft? Or are you drafting these guys on the upside alone, if there's any?
I'm interested in where John Gray lands, for sure. I was just thinking this about this earlier today. We were talked earlier about ballpark factors, that not meaning a whole lot, and definitely home road splits are dumb. But if he would go to another National League West team, because John Gray for about three of the last four seasons has pitched pretty well at Coors. So that would be intriguing to me if he went to another NL West team and would end up pitching there three or four times throughout the season and we didn't have to be really worried about it.
Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time not worrying about anybody going into Colorado regardless of their history, but I get the mindset that you're getting into with that one. All right, and then pick and choose a couple of these guys in this next tier. I think one of the more interesting ones that I have that I've seen is just the Yusei Kikuchi in Seattle. How he had a very interesting contract where it was like the team could have picked up like a 3-year deal. They chose not to, but then he had an option to picking up a 1-year deal. I don't see very many contracts that are built that way. So I thought that was interesting that both of those fell through and he is now a free agent. Seattle is one of those teams that is, everybody says is up and coming. They're going to be, they were right up into the line, up until the end of it with the American League wildcard this year. So everybody expects obviously that they're going to make another jump, especially with all the rumors that Oakland is going to break it all down. Houston is coming off of their World Series appearance, but we're not sure what their roster is going to look like going
World
into the
series
season.
Failure. Yes.
Clarification. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Does Kikuchi make sense anywhere outside of Seattle? And if so, like where, Kevin, are you looking at Kikuchi as an option?
I am. I saw a tweet the other day. I forget the exact numbers, but it was based on his fastball velocity, the games he was successful this season. I know we can say that about pretty much every pitcher out there, but it was very exaggerated. When he was throwing 96 miles an hour, his ERA was under 3. He pitched great games. When it was 94, 95, was his middling starts. And when he was sitting below 94 for a few starts, he was absolutely horrible. So I think there is something to watch here of what kind of velocity we're looking at going into the spring and where he ends up. This is the kind of guy I see going to the Yankees. We've seen Asian players go to New York before, have success. And I think this is the kind of guy that they might like to try to shore up that rotation. And in spite of that short porch, I would be interested in Kikuchi with the Yankees.
If not the Yankees, are you concerned at all that he's going to go back to Japan instead of signing with the major league team?
I don't think so. I'd be a little surprised if that were to happen.
So, Nick, do you see Kikuchi pitching for your Yankees? I know you want every pitcher to succeed,
no.
Regardless of the team. They're still your Yankees.
My Yankee, man. I was a Yankee fan. I guess I still am in the playoffs and stuff. I always root for the pitcher guys. Everyone should know that by now. I don't know. Kay Gao was great with the Yankees. Hasting? I'm just messing around. Okay. But Kikuchi, I mean, that tweet. I remember seeing that tweet. I think it was Rob. It's really nice when you see a tweet and all you do is nod your head. Because I remember the entire year, like, document, oh, hey, he's throwing 94. Like, I'm not interested. This stinks. This isn't good. Well, Kikuchi is good, throwing 96. And then you have a cutter and slider that actually mixes in really well with it. That's when Kikuchi has success. I would love to see a team that's not New York take him on because I think he's going to have too much pressure. There's going to be so much scrutiny of Kikuchi doing well. And honestly, I think it's going to be another tumultuous season of it'll be peaks and valleys. And you won't get the peaks in the valleys if you're on the Yankees because you're going to get cut off too soon. So I would like him not to go there if possible. But I laughed before. I don't know if you heard it very softly because you said, we don't need to touch on all of these. And I go, I want to touch on all of them.
All of them.
I didn't say we weren't going to. I just said we didn't need to.
I'm going to do it very quickly. Can I please?
You're going to take over,
and
Nick?
Permission.
Go for it.
So quickly. This is fun. Because Tyler Anderson, whatever, fine. He's going to be maybe a Toby somewhere. And it'll be like, you'll forget about him. And then maybe you'll be like, oh, what? It's June 3rd. And I could use this start against the now depleted, I don't know, Cubs or whatever. Fine. Drew Smiley, I don't really care. I think he showcased the velocity we saw last year is gone. And it's so inconsistent now. Even Atlanta's, I don't know if we like this. Don't even, whoever takes him, not so much. Zach Davies, don't even. Just don't. Just don't. Alex Cobb is actually really fun. That's a fun one for me. There's one that the Giants could go after. Is Alex Cobb. Michael Pineda, also definitely watch where he goes, because Pineda has shown if I have my slider, I can go 5-6 and actually be good. So definitely watch Michael Pineda. Anthony Descafani, of course, I think re-signing with the Giants is great. Yankees could get him. Everyone, Yankees everywhere.
Came up three times so far. Yep.
But and Eduardo Rodriguez, I've actually seen a lot of things of people thinking that he's underrated. He got unlucky this year. And Eduardo Rodriguez has not, the entire season did not have his changeup and fastball intertwined. And what I mean by that is fastball's actually really good through the season, but the changeup wasn't the proper complement through the season. And I'm really worried that's a thing that's going to stick. He's never quite put it all together because his third pitch is a cutter that sometimes shows up and can get called strikes, and that's about it. And it's not really a proper third offering. So there's going to be a lot of talk about Eduardo Rodriguez being this kind of discount possible ace in there and stuff. I really don't see it with Eduardo. I think there's too much to fix.
I think that
too many things in there.
With Rodriguez, like, he's the only one on this list who got a qualifying offer.
I'd be shocked if he doesn't take it. Maybe he thinks that the market's, oh, they're going to pay me 4 years at $55 million or whatever it is. I don't know. And he goes and takes that instead, which I get. You want the years at this point is what it's about with him. And if he just keeps accepting qualified offers, he's not really going to have the longevity that he wants in his career. Carlos Martinez is the last one there. There is actually some kind of hope for me in the bottom of my heart that Carlos Martinez can put that together again, because he hasn't had a proper just full season of bliss, of health and normalcy. And maybe outside of Cardinals territory, he's only 30. What? He's only 30?
Right.
It could happen. Eduardo Rodriguez, he shouldn't accept the qualifying offer just because he wants those years. And I don't know. I don't really expect him to go frolic and do wonderful things elsewhere.
I can see that if he doesn't accept it, I think that's the end of the negotiations with the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. I think, no, they're not going to.
Heim Bloom is going to be perfectly fine getting that draft pick from whoever.
I do wonder, it might be really tough for Rodriguez because of this. And Heim
Bloom. Yeah, does he get $50 million, which it would take for him to get that draft pick?
We'll see what happens.
Kevin, is there anybody on this list that like just stands out as like you, one, you're looking forward to seeing their new, like you're looking forward to seeing their new team that they're going to be on, whether they need a change of scenery like a Carlos Martinez, or if it's somebody like Descafani who has shown success in San Francisco, do you want him to stay there? Like you mentioned earlier with others, is there anybody like where they end up matters a lot more than the other ones?
Trying to get away from that, as we talked earlier, trying to get away from the where they end up mattering a whole lot. I do agree with Nick of where Michael Pineda goes is interesting. I think it has more to do with team construct and things than it does ballpark, just if it's somewhere that he appears to be comfortable in that rotation. And yeah, I watch a lot of AL Central games, and I've seen Pineda pitch some really good games over the past couple of seasons, just mixed in with all the injuries. When he's healthy, he's good.
Yeah. Some of these guys, what I worry about the most is if whether or not they're going to go into a situation that literally maybe doesn't need a rotation spot, or they become the SP6 in the six man rotation. And then the first one to turn into a long reliever like Martin Perez, that ended up happening in Boston and what have you. Almost the entire rotation ended up happening in Boston for the most part.
And another thing, like, Todd Zola has brought this up a lot with the DH to the NL, that we're not considering it enough for the pitchers. And so Zach Davies, Drew Smyly, guys on this list, whether they go to the American League or whether we get the DH like we all are presuming we're going to get in the National League, these guys probably take a hit.
Yes, it's true. They've at least, at the very least, they've shown, the guys that are in the American League right now have shown what they can do with a DH. And I think there's a lot of people out there that think it's not going to make that much of a difference, but it has to. You were getting an actual player in the lineup for at least three times through, or two or three times through. They are a professional hitter. All the pitchers can't be Zach Greinke or Shohei Ohtani or Madison Bumgarner when he's on, or Clayton Kershaw for that matter.
Madison Bumgarner was bad at hitting this year. He was the quintessential saying, oh yeah, pitchers, no, I want like Madison Bumgarner. Like, guys, he was not good though.
Yeah. You don't want him at the plate if you can avoid it.
Cardboard cutouts, man. Just don't be one of those. You don't want that.
All right. And then I put on this list, guys, that we weren't going to talk about him. But Kevin, I want you to give me, there's a long list here. Two guys on this list that we talked about this. We'll bring this back right in, like in March and what have you. Final pick of a typical, we'll even say, we'll go 15 teamer in the NFBC. Which of these guys is like, you would take that final pick now, not knowing where they're going to go, hoping that they end up in a really good situation? Or, and if you want to say nobody, you can say nobody. But if there's a name out here that kind of stands out, who would that be?
Is it cheating to take Wade Miley when I already know where he went?
That's the guy that stands out the most. Wade Miley is the best pitcher of this lot.
I took him for reference in the 50-round draft and hold drafting right now. I just took him in the 30th round. So that's right at the end of a 15-team normal draft, and that's where I would grab him. He was available there. The other, I really liked Nick's call of Danny Duffy earlier, depending on where he goes.
Just take all of mine.
The problem is he had a setback in September with his recovery from his injury. True. So we got to see how that's going in the offseason. And so my second one that I would be interested in keeping an eye on is, oh, there's a couple here. Which one am I going to take?
You got
Aaron Sanchez is still only 29 years old.
I know. So, it's a fun one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
I'm interested in where he ends up.
He had some opportunities or a moment he was going to be with the Giants and he wasn't throwing hard, though, at all. His velocity was lower. So maybe Aaron Sanchez can get that back. Definitely monitor that. If you guys are wondering about James Paxton's Tommy John at the end of April, but theoretically that means by July there's a chance. I don't know. We'll be talking about James Paxton at some point. I don't want to do that in an NFBC or anything because then you got to actually roster him. You don't have an IL spot there. A couple others I will mention. Merrill Kelly is someone that has showcased the ability to actually give you decent volume. And if he's not on the Diamondbacks, in a position where they allow him to have a long leash, that could be beneficial. And he's not so bad. Matt Shoemaker ain't so bad either when he's feeling his splitter. That's a cool thing. Sometimes the slider is working too, and that's all right. We saw moments of Michael Wacha being all right. These are stretches here. I'd say the most interesting one, though, to me is if Michael Lorenzen gets an opportunity to start. We were actually thinking entering this year that Lorenzen would get this opportunity to start. Had showcased two really nice swings for great pitches. Entering the year, then got hurt, and it all just got lost for a year. But if Lorenzen goes to, say, like the Nationals and is all of a sudden now like their fourth starter, I would definitely have an eye on that.
Yeah, to clarify, Merrill did get his option picked up by Arizona, so he will be with the Diamondbacks.
More of the same then, huh? Good old 4-15 year. Can't wait.
Yeah, so I think a lot of these guys, I think they're just interesting, especially in the situation that we're talking about with these draft and holds, these 50-rounders, whether you're at the 30-round or 50th round, and taking that kind of flyer. If you haven't taken too many flyers throughout the course of that draft as well, we know that. This is a big lesson I learned from the multiple draft and holds that I did last year that I hadn't done a lot of them before. You can't really take too many of those kind of flyers because there's going to be so many injuries throughout the season. You're going to have holes and you're not going to be able to fill them. Simple as that.
Absolutely. I'd have rather had a couple of these guys on some of my teams this year than the flyers that I took in August and September when I was throwing Aaron Bummer out there just to get an inning out of him. Hopefully 1-2 innings, right? I'd have rather had five from one of these guys.
Yeah.
You're taking flyers like a Yamir Yager? What are you doing? Yeah. That's the surprise he was weird. Even in the pool.
It was a 4-sport draft. I had to make sure I had.
Yager was a Philly at some point, right? He's like the only hockey player.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he was a Philly too.
Sure. Oh yeah, I call him a Philly. Oh Lord, what am I?
He signed one of those multi-sports in city sports contracts. They happen all the time.
Of course.
No, but we were talking about picking up Brett Anderson at the beginning of last year, Kevin, you and I, just because he was there. He was going to get a start and he had a decent matchup. And so, yeah, I think it does matter on some of these guys. It matters on all of these guys where they end up and what kind of competition they're going to be facing on a regular basis. But I think in your typical 12-teamer, most of these guys, if any of them, will be streamers at best.
I'm going to say a very insulting thing, and I'm so sorry. I don't want to live in the world where I get excited about picking up Brett Anderson. I'm sorry. I love the dude. I think him on Twitter, he's great in everything. When it comes to what I get on paper for fantasy teams, if that is what excites you, I'm just like, this is the choices I've made and the position I put myself in is just, this isn't it. This isn't what I'm chasing right now. I'm so sorry. I know I've insulted so many by saying that, but it's just that you have decisions to make in life. And you don't have to put yourself in that position.
I'm curious. I keep going up and down this list, guys. Nick, I'll ask you first. Does James Paxton at age 33, granted, yes, he just had Tommy John, he's a free agent, but do you think he gets treated the same way Garrett Richards did when he was coming back from injury, where San Diego signed him to a 2-year deal, knowing he wasn't going to pitch for a year, but thinking that they'd have him for on the quote, the cheap in his second year? Or
that's what's going to happen. I would be surprised if it doesn't. Maybe he just doesn't get signed this year entirely, but I would think that somebody is going to take the chance on that upside. Yes.
You'd think he'd be looking for that kind of an opportunity, right? Obviously, to have a team kind of backing him as he goes through his recovery process as well.
I would say a successful team would want it too, because if it's Tommy John, that means when do you return? August? Great. That means you have
best
James Paxton.
Yeah, sure.
Then you're looking forward to talking about, like, no, their trade deadline is acquiring James Paxton from injuries. And then we all yell about it and we get upset and it's going to be wonderful. So can't wait.
That is one of the better narratives around the trade deadline. Your team didn't make any moves. Oh, we made a move, but it was like a year and a half ago. We knew it was.
It's never fun at all. By the way, I do want to say Yancey Eden says hi, and he called you guys legends. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yancey Eden, our first ever guest.
Our
first is that right? Of course he is. And you are so lucky to have him as your first guest.
We were. That's, and hopefully it won't be the last time.
I'll talk to him, see what I can
let him know.
Yeah, I'll let him know.
All right. I think we've talked, well, I can't say that we've talked enough about pitching. We have Nick Pollock on the show with us, but I think we've gone a little bit long on this podcast.
Wow, look at you. Amazing.
And I think we can close it up. It's not something I was on the rundown for you guys, but I'm curious to know who do you think is that, what teams out there are on the cusp of like really making a jump in their rotation that are going to be more active and not the obvious ones. Nick, and you and I talked about the Yankees are going to make one move. We've mentioned the Yankees enough on this podcast. But Kevin, fine, I'll start with you. Like, what team is going to make the bigger kind of splash? And it doesn't have to be Max Scherzer. It doesn't have to be Detroit getting Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. But like the team that's ready to make that big jump and just has that obvious hole that you think is going to surprise some people.
I see with the couple of injuries they had and the guys that they lost, and Nick is not going to this answer.
It's Yankees, obviously.
It's the Houston Astros just got beat in the World Series because the other team had better pitching than they did. And that kind of leads to moves at times. And they did that with Justin Verlander a few years ago. And it worked. So I can see now I don't think it's going to be him necessarily, but I see them taking those steps again.
All right. If not the Yankees, Nick, who's making the moves that you think they need to make? And I guess the other side of the coin would be what team that needs to make the moves is not going to end up making the moves. But we'll start with who will make the moves.
So I wish in my head right now I had more awareness of salary cap situations. Because I just see the Blue Jays and the Red Sox as these massive offenses. And the Jays, do you really want to trust Ryu as your number two? Not really. They get number three. It's Alek Manoah, and it's Alek Manoah because Robbie Ray's not there anymore.
Barrios.
That's what I'm thinking. There it is. Yeah. But I feel like if they really solidify that 4-5 and have something that is not reliant on Ryu as well, they can make him another push. It took too long for them this year to get there. Manoah came up midway through the season. They acquired Barrios at the trade deadline. And I feel like we all know this. They needed one or two more games and they were in the playoffs. So they are right there on that cusp, and they could certainly benefit from not only just re-signing, but then adding something else on top of that. The Red Sox, we all know how depleted their pitching staff is. It was a laughing stock entering this year. They lucked out with Eovaldi, but Sale wasn't as overwhelming as he needed to be, and there isn't much else to get excited about. Maybe Tanner Houck does blossom, but they don't really want to rely on that. Those are the two that really jump in my head. I can imagine also, I had another team. I was like, oh yeah, that one, Nick, say that one. And I forgot, oh no, the Phillies should be adding someone else. That was a rotation that just did not have anything outside of Nola and Wheeler. And I think that their offense isn't so bad that they should, they acquire a third or fourth that they feel really good about. And Ranger Suarez, we'll talk about that another time. But they will be in the market for at least one major play, I think. And we should be looking at that, because if you talk about the NL East, you know that that's an open door for any team to really go off and seize it. So the Phillies could make a move there.
Yeah, if you want to know Nick's thoughts on Ranger Suarez, make sure you listen to the Van Burnett mock draft.
I watched the full game of him last night and graded every pitch he threw. And it's just a guy that avoids the middle of the plate. And like, that's good, but it's not 11th round.
Can't
good.
Be the
I'm
only
sorry,
thing.
Van.
Yeah, sure.
It's not for me.
He was fine. He was fine.
Exactly. He's fine. He's fine.
I think the entire West Coast basically is going to be active on the in the not Oakland. They're on the coast. That's not the coast.
That's the division NL
no,
West.
No.
Okay, you mean actually on the coast.
On the coast
okay.
itself, not Oakland.
See water.
I mean, the Dodgers in San Francisco, the Dodgers are losing, obviously, Scherzer. They're not going to have, more than likely, they're not going to have Bauer in the rotation.
Kershaw.
They may not have Kershaw. I think that they're going to be active. They're going to add at least one big piece. San Francisco lost their entire rotation, as we talked about earlier. Right. And I'm in agreement in the fact that I don't think that they're going to take a whole lot of chances. They might get Alex Cobb, like you mentioned, or some reclamation project. But I do think that they're going to get more sure thing there. And then I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle added a major piece to their rotation. They are the team that's on the cusp. And obviously they have the Logan Gilberts coming up or have come up. They have the George Kirbys who are going to be coming up probably by the end of the year. I think George Kirby's going to come up in the same vein that Logan Gilbert did this year, but we'll see how they handle that situation. So I can see Seattle. And then, I mean, honestly, San Diego, I don't know what we're expecting out of them at this
point. Who they're going to acquire? All their injured pitchers. All their injured pitchers are coming back. Blake Snell and Yu Darvish and Mike Clevenger and Chris Paddock and Joe Musgrove. That's an amazing rotation. They should do really well. Look, I think we don't focus enough on the fact that everything that could go wrong for the Padres did. We don't do that enough. We don't recognize that the game of baseball has so many intertwining things of luck that, like, the Padres, they were set up for it. They even got like 8 pitchers. They didn't have 5. They didn't like, oh no, we didn't get enough depth. They went out and got extra depth.
Extra.
And that depth got hurt. It was so unfortunate what happened to them. Morejon got hurt. Like, what? You're like a backup thing. They had to throw out Ryan Weathers because Mackenzie Gore still wasn't ready. It was wild to me how bad things turned out. And if I'm a Padres fan, I should feel great about 2022 because I'd be like, oh, we just get to try again and spin this wheel and don't get the double zero this time. Yeah, I'm excited for them.
They got so much depth, like you mentioned, that they felt comfortable sending away their depth, like Luis Patino going to Tampa in that deal for Snell. So I can see what you're saying. It's something that needs to be considered when going in. Yeah, they're getting their entire rotation back. They were already there. And so
they were so close with all of those things going poorly. I think it's, I mean, if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, I'm not. Padres, I think, are going to be the most underrated team entering 2022 because of how bad it was this year, how it didn't work this year. Everyone's going to forget how good they're supposed to be.
And when we're talking West Coast, is it even an off season if we're not talking about the Angels when we're talking about every pitcher on the market?
And they get none of them.
it's like the getting none of them right. There, it's like the death sentence. You go to the, do you want to lose a limb? Go to the Angels. Congrats. You did it.
You made it.
But you lost it, really. You lost your health.
It's all perspective.
There it is. But yeah, they should every single year. We know this. Give Trout and now Jared Walsh too, and Ohtani, of course. Yeah, give them more support, please. I would love that. I just want them to be in the World Series so badly. Anyway, I'm ranting again, guys. This is all my fault. I'm so sorry.
You know what? On that note, I think that's a very positive note to leave it at. I think that is going to do it for this week's On the Wire. I'm going to, of course, thank Nick Pollock for joining us on this episode. Nick, I want you to give our listeners, our specific listeners, any sort of preview, any kind of tidbit, any kind of carrot of things that they can expect out of Pitcher List this offseason that they should get them excited to either join PL Plus, talk to us in the Discord, or what to expect with PL 7 coming up. Just get them excited a little
bit. Yeah. There's one thing I mentioned, I think, on the Twitch stream, if you guys have watched it, but I'm going to be doing my own new podcast next year. That's instead of The First Pitch, I'm going to be moving over to do a pitching podcast every morning. So instead of talking about everything, we will still have The First Pitch podcast, but we'll be doing one exclusively for PL Plus people. So if you're thinking about getting the yearly one, there are things like that that we're adding just as bonuses to people that get it. If you want to hear my voice more and talk for 30 minutes every morning about pitching, that's what I'm going to be doing. I know. Crazy. I should be talking about hitters in the morning anyway. You don't want to hear me talk about that. So I figure this would be the best thing I can do for you guys. And yeah, there's one small tidbit of PL7. So many things, but yeah, that's one.
Yeah, regardless, you guys should be joining PL Plus. You can talk to me and Kevin as well through the Discord. We're in the voice channel every once in a while.
It's so easy. You're right there. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, it is just like how direct access you have to everybody, like through a Discord server, like the direct messaging, through tagging anybody in any of the channels.
And we all want to be talked to, too. It's really
why
fun.
We're there.
Yeah, we just want to talk about this stuff. So you just get to join the Discord. Everybody's there. You have an amazing community. I know I sound like a shill because obviously, what do you know? But still, I absolutely love it. I call it my favorite thing that we've created is that community inside of Discord.
It's so fun. And just the banter that happens in all the different various channels goes in all different directions as well. All right. As a reminder, we will be continuing to put out episodes throughout the off season every other Sunday here at On the Wire. So keep a lookout for those incoming. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade, all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. And also make sure to follow at Pitcherless Pods to get updates on every new episode of all the Pitcherless Podcast Network's shows and give them all a listen. I'd be very surprised if you're not already, but you can follow Nick at Pitcherlist as well.
Hey, come on by. Say hi.
Your DMs are open on Pitcher on
they
Twitter
are,
as
they
well.
Are open. I have not regretted this. I did this last year and it's been great. So say hi.
All right. Thanks once again to Nick for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.